This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 104, sponsored by the Netflix and Jim Hanley's Universe. iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 104. My name is Josh, and I'm here with someone.
You sound so freaking friendly. What's wrong with you?
I know, you're not Josh.
Well, the thing is, I've been talking to people, and they think that I come off as a little harsh, so I decided to turn it up.
Oh, really? You got feedback that you come off as harsh?
No, but it was for the joke.
Is that what the focus group said?
Yeah, well, I get notes from the network.
Ron, you're too urban.
Damn it. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's too urban. You have to.
Connor, you're actually coming across as too Caucasian.
Well,
I don't know what that means exactly. I'm here with Ron and Connor, who I threw off.
Hello.
Hi.
And we're from iFanboy.com, which is a comic book website where we talk about comics. We read a bunch of them every week, and one of us is assigned picking the task of picking the best one, writing a review about it, and then we come here and we talk about that book and other books from the week that we feel like talking about. So that's the deal.
It gets to be a mouthful, doesn't it?
It does.
The mumbly jumbly. Yeah.
And I think we fell out of practice a little bit.
Yeah, I think we did. We got a little lazy.
Okay, so before we get going, this is for people who have read their books already or don't care to have them ruined, because we're going to talk about plot points and things and stuff. There'll be spoilers. So if you haven't read your book, you may want to come back after you have. But really, it won't matter. But that's my point of view. Whatever.
Anyway, you'll live.
This week, Ron had to save, basically, because I was supposed to have the pick, but I didn't do it because I'm lazy shit. So, Ron, what did you pick?
Well, I had to – I warmed up in the bullpen, and then I came out, and I saved the day with Fear Agent number 4, Fear Agent The Last Goodbye, issue number 4. For those of you who are just new to the podcast or haven't, for some reason, missed the past 6 months, you might have missed the fact that, collectively, we love Fear Agent.
Yes.
And it's a recent thing. Connor read it first, and then Josh and I kind of came late to the bandwagon, and right around May or June of this past year, we kind of discovered it. And Fear Agent, for those who haven't heard of it, is written by Rick Remender. This issue was drawn by Tony Moore.
Yay.
And colored by Lee Lowridge. It was previously a series published by Image, and there are two trade paperbacks out. And with this series, Fear Agent: The Last Goodbye, this four-issue miniseries, is the first series published by Dark Horse. They moved to the Dark Horse label, and Dark Horse has recently republished the first two trade paperbacks, so you can go pick them up if you want to. But when we discovered them, it was like a breath of fresh air in that it was a comic book unlike any comic book I've read in a long time.
But yet entirely traditional.
Yeah, exactly. It was a return to form of the classic sci-fi genre comic, at least those first two trades were. And then with this series, The Last Goodbye, what we did was we saw we kind of moved to almost like a prequel status. This takes place before the first two trades, and we get introduced to our protagonist, Heath Houston, and his world before it gets all turned upside down and aliens invade Earth, and it became a sci-fi war comic as we see the battle for Earth, and culminating in this issue, which an awesome cover where you see the reflection of the Earth forces running at an alien, and you see the reflection in his dome, and you see Heath leading the way, holding a gun up in the air and holding the Texas flag, and and it was just, after reading this issue and looking at my whole stack of books, and I bought a shit ton of books again this week, it's getting really, really bad. I sat back and I was just like, Fear Agent has just been such a delight to read, and it has been so much fun. And for reasons being that, like, it's, I mean, between the idea, the concept is really, really good. The classic science fiction, the execution is amazing. Tony Moore on pencils, and like I mentioned, Lee Loridge's colors all work together to form this visually stunning every panel. I mean, I found myself turning each page, reading it, and then just sitting there and like looking at it.
Even like the production of this book is really good. I mean, like, I'm holding it in my hand and it's like, it's $3 just like any other, but it's got these big fat pages and, you know, like
thick,
they're nice
paper stock.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book.
Yeah. And it was just great to see. This is the last issue of this miniseries, and what it did was, you could never have read Fear Agent before and you could picked up this miniseries and enjoyed it.
I think that's a lot of people did that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And if you've read Fear Agent, if you read the first two trades, you got answers to kind of, what that universe is, why the characters are the way they are. You understand huge plot points about characters' motivations and why they're the way they were in the previous series, mainly in with the main character of Heath. You find out that he helped win the war, but at the same time also basically committed xenocide, right? I mean, genocide, or was it, I guess, xenocide is against aliens, right?
It is xenocide. I forget. Call Orson Scott Card and ask him.
Exactly. He single-handedly struck back against the aliens.
It's the nerdiest joke I've told in months.
But so we find out that he single-handedly struck back against the aliens that attacked them and destroyed their homeworld, and no one other than his wife knew about it, that he did that. And so you understand that why in the previous trade paperbacks that came out previously, why he's, kind of a stumbling drunk and not really, kind of disassociated from life, because he's dealing with the weight of what his past transgressions were.
I don't want to ruin this for anybody, but basically, like, the really normal thing to do here would have been his wife got killed, and that's what wrecked him. And that's actually not what happened in this book, which is just like the little bit of not doing the completely traditional thing,
Yeah. No. Exactly. But what I think is greatest about it is that we really – they're making a comic book that, if you ask me, we're at the precipice of like the next generation of creators. Right now we're kind of living in the world of Bendis and Brubaker and Rucka and stuff like that. I really believe that we're starting to see emerging some creators like – and Kirkman's kind of led the way here. I think Remender is part of that. Tony Moore is definitely part of that, who are evolving the comic book form. To not only to its roots in terms of, like content and subject matter and stuff like that. And I know we've talked to Remender, and we've talked about Remender before, and we're going to talk about him later in the podcast, where he loves the idea of genre books and stuff like that. But also in the approach of the books, where, we talk a lot about it, comes up in our private conversations as well as here on the podcast, this is going to read great in the trade, or this was made for the trade, or whatever. And I personally hate that. I can't stand it, because I'm buying a monthly comic book. It should read like a monthly comic book. And recently, books like Fear Agent, a book like Exterminators and stuff like that, have pointed out to me that there are folks who are making this where I bought this miniseries in issue and enjoyed every issue of it. And it stood by itself as a monthly issue. Collected as a trade paperback, I'm sure it's going to read great as well. Basically, they figured out the way to do both, which I think is the future of the industry. if you ask me. And the creators who are able to figure this out are the ones who are going to be successful. And so it got me a little excited about the industry to see a book like this hopefully doing well and hopefully selling, and hopefully you'll all go out and read it, because it really is, I think, going to be one of the forerunners of the next kind of gen of comics, you know, in the next.
I think that you're definitely on point, and I don't know if I'd even thought of this, but I think when you think about the next people who are going to, you know, I don't want to say replace, but like people who are going to fill Geoff Johns and Brian Bendis' shoes, there's a real good chance that Remender is going to be one of those people. You know, and I mean, there's other guys like that. And I think if he's not already, like, Tony Moore is like he's like the indie band that everybody loves. Yeah. You know, like he's for me, he could be one of the top name artists. He just doesn't seem to be wanting to do those kind of projects.
Yeah. You know, but he does interesting work instead.
Right.
Well, yeah.
No,
what I think is really interesting is that, like, there you can buy a, I don't want to say, I mean, I'm only using this in with tongue in cheek, but you can buy a corporate comic. You could buy Spider-Man, you could buy X-Men, you could buy Superman, you could buy Batman, and you're pretty much sure you know what you're going to get based off that establishment of those characters and those companies. Grant Morrison, Geoff Johns, Mark Waid.
I don't know what I'm getting with a Grant Morrison book.
Well, no, I think
never, ever not for a second.
No, but I think you do, though. I mean, ultimately, DiDio isn't going to let Morrison steer Batman that far off.
He left Frank Miller.
Well, yeah, no, but that was 20 years ago.
No,
you know
that's,
what I mean?
That's
oh, 7 years ago.
Actually, I disagree
no.
with that.
But. Well, no, I think in terms of ongoing monthly continuity, there is a editorial presence that is, you can't argue, is persistent across those main tier of books. I mean, that's what exists. They're guiding those characters to a point where they want to take them editorially. Of course, that allows the creators to do, you know, to add their little touches, and as long as they get Spider-Man to this point, then it's okay, and that sort of thing. But what you've got with books like Fear Agent and books like Invincible and stuff like that is you've got, it's almost like you said, the indie band that they're doing what they want to do.
Sure.
They're creating their own characters, and they're creating their own universes and telling the kind of stories that and it's almost kind of cyclical, because they're telling the kind of comics that they remember growing up reading, or that you know, and so it's almost like a throwback to what they, you know, from comics of 20, 30 years ago, but with a modern twist and an evolution in terms of quality and in terms of, you know, craft. So I mean, I think honestly, books like this are kind of where it's at when you want to look to the future of the industry, and whether or not, you know, like, I think it would be great to see somebody like Remender or Tony Moore working on, you know, the X books or on JLA or something like that. I kind of also want them to be successful. I would prefer them to be successful doing their own thing, because if it's kind of like, you know, that's nice, but we're going to do this over here.
Yeah,
know?
Totally. So. I mean, I don't mean to say that – I think most of the time books, superhero books will do that. But I do think that when you get a guy like a creator who's especially talented, like, they sometimes give them their corner to let those people do what they want. And I think with that, you end up with, you know – like a lot of the stuff that Brubaker's done, where I think with Daredevil with Bendis more so, but you know, Daredevil and Captain or Brubaker and Captain America, like they were just like, I'm gonna go off my corner and do my thing. And there are occasionally.
But he's doing their thing. But honestly, I mean, like, and Daredevil 101 came out this week and it was really, really good. But is it that far off of what we know as of Daredevil? You know what I mean? Like, it's not that. You know, I mean, it's not that. You know, barrier breaking. It's not that, you know.
No, but there's and it's not all the time. And I don't even think the current incarnation of Daredevil is really it. But if you think about, like, certain people will come in sometimes, and the thing is, they come from books like Remender's Fear Agent. Like, people, they'll give somebody like who does a book like this some like a corner of Marvel, and all of a sudden something amazing happens that you've never seen before. It doesn't not happen. It doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen sometimes.
It's just that it's rare. And,
it is,
and yeah. So
those are the moments I live for, you know, as a Marvel reader.
Exactly. But anyway, but it's great to know that you can come to Dark Horse and pick up Fury, and you go to Image and you can pick up, you know, any of those books that we've talked about that have come from Image that they've been doing such great stuff out over there. And you can really see kind of hopefully is the future of the industry, and it doesn't necessarily have to be from the big two. I think that's what this book kind of shows as well. But surprisingly, what came in a very, very close second, which I almost picked, was X-Men First Class number 5 for Marvel, written by Jeff Parker and drawn by Roger Cruz. This has been a kind of an under-the-radar kind of book. It's got an X, so I imagine it immediately turns some folks off, but I gotta say, you shouldn't let that do that to you.
Well, and if you watch the video show that came out the day before this podcast, and I think we talked about that.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about in that video show. I recommended it, the first hardcover of X-Men First Class to you and Connor.
So you're saying as it goes on in the second incarnation, still good.
Yeah, no, here we are in the fifth issue, and it's again, just to kind of give people an idea of what it is, it's kind of in between issues of the 60s X-Men, kind of in between the panels, tales.
I don't think it's that, because it doesn't take place in the 60s. It's not like when Busiek wrote that Untold Spider-Man, it actually was in between the panels because it referenced stories and it was contemporary. This is X-Men now, so it's just
no, but I challenge that with this issue. I mean, did you read this issue?
Yes.
This issue starts off with they're doing it in a clever way where you're right. Busiek's Untold Tales of Spider-Man, which came out in the 90s, literally was this takes place in between Amazing Spider-Man number 4 and number 5 and that sort of thing. In 1964. What they're doing is they're modernizing that original team to make it almost timeless, or at least, you know, not campy and dated by our standards. But like with this issue, the first page is a reprint of a page from the early Hulk comics, right, of Thunderbolt Ross screaming about the Hulk, and in a clever way it's got a little handwritten note of Hank yelling at Bobby and Warren to keep away from his comics. And then this story then is the tale of the X-Men being called in by the Army to help General Thunderbolt Ross find the Hulk.
Right.
So this story definitely is meant to take place in between the pages of the comic that it mentioned on the first page.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it can't, because it wouldn't make sense. One's in the 60s, one's in the 00s.
Right, but the thing is, I don't think this X-Men First Class takes place in a year. Well, if you ask Jeff Parker, it's not saying this is 2007, but it's also not 1963.
Well, they've got
email and they've got things like that. It's not at all. Right. I mean, it's reimagining of the old stories.
But anyway, this is a great issue. You know, every issue seems to have some little aspect of the X-Men plus the Marvel Universe, and this one happens to be the Hulk. I thought this was actually the best issue I've read yet of this series art-wise.
Roger Cruz still on it?
Cruz is still on it. There is an amazing two pages of when the X-Men are fighting the Hulk, and it's a panel of Cyclops, you know, going to his visor, then shooting the Hulk, and the Hulk kind of getting up from the rocks, and then he kind of rubs his jaw and goes, not bad. And then you turn the page, and there's almost the exact same layout, but with the Hulk then doing his kind of clap, and he knocks all the X-Men down, and they see Jean Grey get up, and she says, not bad.
Yeah.
Like, those two pages were, and then the third page actually culminating in Jean Grey telekinetically throwing the Hulk away. Those 2 to 3 pages, I thought, based on those pages alone, I almost picked it as the pick of the week. I'm like, oh, this is great. This is awesome.
It's a super fun book. I mean, really fun to read.
Yeah, it really is the X-Men as that, you know, kind of bumbling, still learning their powers, heroes, trying to be superheroes and students at the same time of the 60s, kind of set now, in an accessible kind of way that is just great for all ages, great for, you know, fans of Marvel, great for fans of X-Men, great for people who are curious about the X-Men but never got around to reading them. Just primo, primo, primo. So,
yes,
I dug it.
Josh, you were surprised this week.
Yeah, so I just happened to read Thunderbolts 117, and I believe if I remember last week, like, we were saying, hey, what happened to that? No one talks about it.
We did, actually, yeah.
And so I just had a chance.
You were close to writing it off.
No,
I did write it off.
I had dropped it previously. Yeah,
I stopped buying it. But I read through 117, and I really liked part of it. But then again, it was mostly because it was one of the characters who wasn't normally in it. What you have here is mostly a conversation between Doc Samson, a character I'm only vaguely familiar with. I actually looked him up on Wikipedia, which is
he's a Marvel Universe psychiatrist, de facto.
Yeah, and he's got some Hulk power to him.
Yeah.
And it's him talking to Robbie, and basically
Robbie, who is Penance, who was Speedball.
Right. Sorry. And basically, if you've ever seen, there's an episode of The West Wing. Where a psychiatrist shut up. Where a psychiatrist goes in to talk to the president, and he's kind of a tough ass psychiatrist.
Well, that was a great episode.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like that, where basically he tells the president to stop being a bitch.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this is about. Like, he just talks plain to Robbie, you know, and is like, and basically the conceit of the character of Penance is that he's a cutter. Which is, I thought was a little, you know, like a little rote, but whatever. Like, he cuts himself so that he can feel.
He accesses his power by
Yeah, he's saying like there's.
But it's in a selfish kind of almost drug kind of way. Yeah,
right. You know, they're suggesting that it's you know it's just self-centered and ultimately destructive, and childish. And I don't know. I really enjoyed it, and I was like, I want that. I don't have any experience with Speedball, but I have a feeling like if I was a fan of Speedball, I would be like, what the hell did you do to this character right now?
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because I was thinking the exact same thing on the way home from the comic book store before I'd read this.
Uh-huh.
That's funny that you said that. So.
And like I like what it is. They kind of showed a way out for this character, and that in the destruction of everything that is the Thunderbolts, which I don't care about. I did read the parts that have Norman Osborn and Moonstone. I'm like I could care less about any of that. But I thought that the scenes with Doc Samson and Speedball Penance, whatever, were really good. Did you guys like it?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You know, it was a good, like, one-time read. You know, it doesn't make me want to pick up any more of the series because it's not going to be that anymore, but nor would I want it to be. But it was a nice, like, diversion.
Yeah, I mean, if you're reading this book, I assume you really enjoyed this.
I just remember we dropped it a few months ago, and I remember back when we dropped it, the team was in turmoil. And Norman Osborn was at war with his psychosis about being Green Goblin.
It seems to be the same.
And it seems, except for the Speedball stuff,
I don't know though because the stuff towards the end with the prisoners that came in and then them all talking telepathically and with the kind of like we see like a plot of invading the Thunderbolts and attempting to take them down from the inside with these kind of like you know. Crappy heroes that have been corralled by them. That got me kind of curious and interested to see where he's going with that. I mean, that was an interesting subplot introduced with this issue that I actually am excited to. I'm curious to see what happens.
I agree that it was interesting. Yeah. I think it'd be more interesting if the rest of the plot hadn't been the same spot it was 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah,
when I
read the book. Fair enough.
Yeah,
fair
what's funny is that I didn't feel like I'd missed anything.
Yeah, exactly. I could jump back on now and not have worried.
Probably not going to though. But it was a really good issue. Just like the first one was a really good issue.
Yeah.
So you can buy it every 7 months or so.
How about that Crawl Space XXX Zombies?
So yeah, so I and you mentioned earlier that you were surprised that I picked this up. I actually picked it up on a whim. I was reviewing the pull list and I was just looking in. I was reviewing the shipping list and I was looking at some titles that I didn't recognize. I saw Crawl Space number one and I looked it up and I saw this is the first issue of what is meant to be like a horror anthology.
Mm-hmm.
from published by Image. It's $2.99 and it's by Rick Remender, Tony Moore, and Kieran Dwyer. At least this first arc is. I don't know if it's always going to be that team.
It's a four-part arc, so this story is going to be 4 issues, and then as it's an anthology, the next thing could be completely different.
Right, and what it was is I think Remender and Moore did the story, Remender wrote it, and then Kieran Dwyer drew it. Basically, what got me to buy it was it's a zombie book. It's about...
Which you love.
Which, tongue in cheek, you know, I don't really like the zombies, but what if zombies invaded late 1970s LA porn filmmakers?
It's Boogie Nights versus meets Night of the Living Dead.
And I was like, that's a concept I want to read. And so, I picked it up, and it was a blast. I mean, it was, again, we talked about this last week with Marvel Zombies 2. You know, the zombie thing can be done well and can be done right. You know what I mean? Like, you know, again, we see it. You know, this is kind of straight up, you know.
Well, this is straight out of Grindhouse. I mean.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I was trying to think of the word to describe it. But yeah, like the movie Grindhouse, like the Grindhouse movies that came out, you know, last spring, definitely.
But even the pages are all aged.
Yeah.
The
coloring is lighter.
Is washed out, and the white edges look like, you know, it looks like it's been, like, stippled by some moisture or whatever.
Yeah.
So
again, colors by Lee Lowridge. Lee Lowridge did the colors on Fury Agent 2. Like, fantastic.
You know what else he does?
What?
Fables.
Yeah, I know. I won't hold that against them.
Except he won an they're winning Eisners for that book. But whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
I almost said Emmy. I didn't really know what to think about this, and I wasn't gonna buy it because I don't really care about zombies all that much. But I was like, oh, they have fun doing books every time I read them, and it was just a lot of fun, and like the conceit of like being a bunch of just self-destructive 70s porn actors and filmmakers was kind of funny, and you know. It's just over the top and ridiculous, and you know they've set it up so that I'm interested in seeing what happens next. It's a fun horror book for the adults.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely for the adults.
Yes.
And hence the name is XXX Zombies.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. You know, another thing, I don't know if you noticed about this, but again, it's like beautiful production.
Yeah.
Thick paper, like the most expensive. No ads, you know.
The Dark Horse?
Image. No, Image. Mm. Image.
Connor, did you read Robin this week? Robin 167?
Yes, what kind of a dumb question is that?
I know. Well, it was a segue. Did you think of it? Did it, you know?
It was weird because it's a fill-in issue between writers, between Anna Beechin and I guess Chuck Dixon. I don't know if he's doing it or not. But
this is Brandon Thomas. I'd never heard of him. I didn't expect anything out of it. I was really pleasantly surprised by this issue. Basically, like if you think about what Robin's been through since Identity Crisis, his father's been killed. Most of his friends are dead.
He lost an ex-girlfriend and spoiler. Not since Identity Crisis, but in recent times, girlfriend got shot.
It's nothing but loss. It's been
But he's the character who's not cracking. He's not like Matt Murdock, who's on the edge of ruin. You know, Daredevil is constantly in a stage of like, you're like, is he going to kill himself this issue? Like Robin is a 15, 16-year-old kid, and he's holding it down. He's holding it together. And this issue is the first one to start to show a crack in his armor. And I thought that I thought that was a really bold move for a guy who's basically a fill-in writer.
I thought the idea of the story was great, and the need to describe that. I thought this fill-in writer's dialogue wasn't the best, but. But I do appreciate the fact that they're actually delving into to what all this means for Robin, which was
good. I think it's totally time to. And I think there were some really touching pages. I think
The ending was fantastic.
Right. And that's actually what made me go, wow, this is actually worth talking about, where like he kind of breaks down in front of his dad's tombstone and then, you know, Batman shows up and kind of like at the very end, Batman looks over at the tombstone and he's like, "Good night, Jack. It's just Tim's dad. I'll take it from here." And it's like this really simple. Even now, I'm talking about it, I'm getting a little chills because.
You know what else is interesting is the more Tim tries to not be Bruce, the more he becomes Bruce. I mean, this is totally a Bruce thing to go to the grave and break down in front of it.
And
he's becoming Batman.
For a person to come in and be able to pick that up as a one issue fill in thing, at the perfect point to do it in a character's development, I was really impressed by. He's not doing any issues after this. It's going to be Chuck Dixon, so that could go.
I'm not positive that if he's coming right on or not.
It's just a one issue thing. I don't think it would be terribly interesting to you if you haven't been reading it all along, but it was good and I liked it.
Excellent.
Awesome. So, and if you liked any of those books and want to check them out and you're in the New York City metro area, you should go to Jim Hanley's Universe. Which is one of the best comics bookstores around. They got a great selection of comics and superheroes and indie books and manga and mini comics and a whole bunch of stuff. So if you're ever in New York City, you should come to Jim Hanley's Universe where art and literature meet. They've got two locations. One is on 33rd Street in Manhattan across the street from the Empire State Building, and the other one's at 325 New Dorp Lane in Staten Island. That's New Dorp, D-O-R-P.
Someday we should charter a boat and go out there.
That's a good idea.
I don't have my Staten Island shots currently, though. They're not up to date.
325 New Dorp Lane in Staten Island, as Connor mentioned. And if you head into the store and you buy something, tell them iFanboy sent you. And if you want to go visit them online, you can go to jhuniverse.com, or you can visit their MySpace page and be their friend at myspace.com/Jim Hanley's Universe. If you friend them, tell them iFanboy told you to friend them, blah, blah, blah. Jim Hanley's Universe, where art and literature meet. So,
how much do I want a Green Arrow book by Jock and Andy Diggle?
How much do you want?
A lot.
I would also like that.
I thought this Green Arrow Year One issue 6 of 6 came out, and I thought it ended really strong.
Yep.
The final issue of the is it retconning or retelling of Green Arrow's origin? This is a retcon.
It's an updation. Is updation a word? It's not a word, but I invented
now
it.
Now it is.
Updation.
Yeah, now it is.
Copyright Connor.
He retconned English.
Yes, I thought, you know, this is, I know Ron's going to hate this, but this is definitely a miniseries for the trade. It's felt,
fuck you.
It's felt thin by issues. I love you. And, but I think this last one has been really strong. I thought the ending was great. I liked his relationship with the slave girl.
Yeah, definitely.
And
it was a little odd at the end when he was like, "You want to come live with me?"
Yeah, I agree.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, I thought he got a but the thing is that then but it actually
makes sense.
It wasn't until the last couple pages where it felt like the Ollie that I knew.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
well, he's growing into it. He's still, you know, yeah. young. And yeah. I thought the last page just, you know, it just makes yep. you want to go into that world.
Oh,
and
God.
As much as I great. Love the current book and Judd Winnick's take on Green Arrow, which is awesome, I really want, like, an early gritty Green Arrow book by Diggle and Jock really badly.
This is a great series.
I just finished reading The Losers, the whole thing all the way through. And this is, just them working just as well together.
You want to know what else is working well together? Ultimate Spider-Man number 115. I think you know how sometimes they say it takes a couple issues for a team to gel.
I saw the exact same thing.
This is the one where Eminem was just like, click. Okay, now we've got it.
That's amazing. I thought the exact same thing.
That's really creepy. I had the exact same reaction except for Kitty's awful costume.
Well, yeah, but that's not his fault. Oh. I mean, that was done before that. I don't know how she sees, but anyway, it's like all covered.
She phases her vision through it.
But and what I think might have done it was Peter Parker not in the Spider-Man mask.
Yeah.
I think that I really believe that Immonen was drawing Peter Parker, and I really got it. You know, real briefly, you know, the Goblin is back, and Nick Fury's not running S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore. Carol Danvers is, and the last issue ended with her arresting Spider-Man, and we find out that she was trying to use Spider-Man as bait to lure Green Goblin with a very public arresting. Kitty sees the public arresting, Kitty Pryde, and she runs and she boosts Peter out of S.H.I.E.L.D. prison, and then ultimately
I loved because that has much more depth to their relationship.
The scene where Kitty is like decides that she has to go.
Yeah.
She's sitting there doing homework, and I was just like, wow, that's brilliant. No one ever, you know, that's one of those things they never talk about. Like, I have to go.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Is it rude if I leave?
And then him going, hey, you know who he is, don't you? Anyway, you know, it was just there were so many good moments in this book.
Yeah. I laughed out loud when they deputized.
Wait, that's what I'm talking about. Right. I'm getting to. So they escape from the S.H.I.E.L.D. things, and then they square off with the S.H.I.E.L.D. troops, and they have a big argument. And basically, Carol Danvers says, "Okay, fine, I'm deputizing you. You guys are S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. Let's go get the Goblin." And she hands them big guns, and she says, and they're like, "You're giving us guns? We're miners." And she's like, "No, it's not a gun. They're neural neutralizers or whatever." And you know. And she's trying to tell them that they can do this and they have superpowers, and it's all very kind of like very curt and short and brusque and kind of military. And then at the end of the panel, the end of the page, possibly I don't remember the last time I've laughed out loud, but the last panel is Kitty and Peter talking, and they're holding these guns, and Kitty goes, "It's not a gun," and Peter goes, "It's a noonie noodleiner." Like, literally. Like, in the panel before, Carol Danvers says it's a neural neutralizer, and then it goes a noonie nina leader. It was possibly the best panel ever.
And that is followed by, like, a classic Spider-Man and villain fight, where A, he's being quippy and funny, and you really do get the sense, like, very real sense that he's doing this to distract himself, to make him not worry about how dangerous, but you actually feel like there's danger. I felt like there was danger. I know he's not going to get killed.
Interestingly enough, did you pick up a couple pages earlier when he ran out of web fluid?
Right, yeah, and that's where the danger comes from.
Well, he ran out because Carol Danvers was being a bitch and was shooting it off in front of him.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought that was great, that one panel where he just tries to use the web shooters and you just see the sound effect, the PSS, PSS, the pss, you know, like it's empty. And then that carries so much weight I'm like, oh, shit, how's he going to get out of this? I know he's not going to die, but it's just a great cliffhanger.
Yeah,
he's going to acquire the cosmic powers there.
Yeah.
You are not kidding about Eminem, though. I mean,
it's a great looking book.
So good.
I don't know what's going on with Flash 233.
Yeah, in the same way of when creators click on Ultimate Spider-Man, I think I'm going to be bold. Mark Waid, move on.
He already did it. He had his take. A lot of times you try to go back. There's somebody whose initials are the same who's tried to do that. Chris something.
Oh, what, Claremont?
X-Men.
No, I agree. This feels a lot like when Claremont came back to the X-Men in 2000.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go out and say it. I don't like what they've done with the kids. I don't like the plot. I thought the Justice League involvement at the end of this was
weird
and weak. It was just like, and it wasn't Wally.
No, that's the biggest problem. I liked the first Waid book, mm-hmm. And I kind of liked the second one. But ever since then, it feels like it's ironically we're running in place here.
You know,
nothing has happened. And B, everybody feels off. No, he doesn't feel like Wally. the kid involvement was a mistake. There's no point in having the kids.
Yeah, and you know what's creepy? Jacked up, muscly little kids.
Yeah.
And any day of the week, that's too weird. However, this is Freddie Williams' first issue.
I liked it a lot.
I did. I don't think he's got it down yet. I feel like this one was a little rushed. But here's for an Asian Linda Park. Let's hear it for a girl. Like, she's Asian. You can tell. Thank God.
You know the end of Weird Science, Ron, where they intimidate the monsters into leaving the house, and they all kind of walk off meekly?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the feeling I got from when Batman's like, oh, we're sorry. And he sort of,
yeah, it was so freaking weird.
You know, like when the scary guy in Weird Science is like, oh, excuse us, we'll just be
And then he walks away and he goes, I'm a school teacher.
Yes. Well, even that's how that's the feeling I got from the Justice League leaving. It was very strange.
It was the whole thing from when they came back and then they're like, hey, thanks for the assist, there's beer in the fridge, and then that weird Superman panel where like we've come for the kids, and then that like kind of like that fantasy of Flash fighting them, you know,
which
like
was weird
the kids
because there was
running.
No indication it was a fantasy or that it
Yeah, exactly. And then like and not to mention Superman looked really weird, like but whatever, I'm not gonna worry about that.
Did you like the backup story?
No. Well, here's the thing. I like that there was a backup story. I didn't actually like the backup story.
Oh, I did. I had fun with it.
I don't know. I didn't like it. But,
they were fighting the Henson characters or whatever.
Yeah, I just didn't like Braithwaite's art, so that's all. Okay. So, but I like the fact that there was a backup story. But Mark Waid, move on. And DC is kind of going downhill.
Well, you know,
you got Wonder Woman, you got Wonder Woman, you got Superman, you got Flash. Their core characters are all in disarray.
They had Guggenheim, great writer.
Yeah.
Had a handle on it. We were rolling. They had Carl Kiesel on it. Like,
yeah.
What?
Or not even Carl Kerschel. Kerschel.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
How could I get those two mixed up? This book's on the block.
Really quickly, Gotham's Underground number one came out. Frank Thierry writing, Jim Calafiori penciling. He did some 52 issues.
I like Calafiori.
Yeah. This I bought it because it's a miniseries that's supposed to include all the Batman heroes and all the villains. So I checked it out. What I didn't realize was there's a whole story brewing in the DC Universe that is going to involve Checkmate and Countdown and a bunch of other titles. Countdown this week where you saw Two-Face being brought to jail.
Oh, you mean when they're taking them to a prison that nobody knows about?
Yeah, that
and he's
happened.
Dressed like Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, he got arrested in this comic by Suicide Squad. Basically, the story is that Checkmate is attempting to gather up all the villains and ship them off world. Sounds familiar.
Is it in the negative zone? Is there a number 42
possibly
nearby?
Yeah, but sure. So that's happening underneath the tapestry of some other books, and it's all going to come together apparently later on. But a lot of it's happening in this one. This is the dealing with all the Gotham part of it. And
it's like that year that all the Meteor movies came out, and then
so this
yeah,
is this
so.
Was, this had it all. Had Batman, Robin, Nightwing, had Two-Face and Riddler and Penguin, and you know basically
really?
Had everybody. And the Suicide Squad busts in and arrests Two-Face, and it's I didn't realize there's this undercurrent story going on, but now I'm very interested because Checkmate is deeply involved in it, and who doesn't love Checkmate?
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was good. It was fun.
I think to answer your question, a whole lot of people don't love Checkmate.
Screw them, then.
Sales numbers, but you should love Checkmate. So
jerks.
Cool. It's not easy to love.
Jerks.
Good week. Good week. I think.
Yeah.
So. I don't know. Really.
All right, let's get to some email then.
Jared from Knox Vegas, Tennessee, who says he started reading comics when he was about 12, and he's 28 now, but there was a period when he was about 16 when he stopped reading and he started back up again about a year ago. We've all been through that. When he was younger, he wasn't a big DC fan, but lately he's been starting to read DC comics, and therein lies the problem. He's trying to read Countdown in 52 along with several other monthly DC titles. He finished 52 in the current Countdown issue, but he's thinking about dropping DC altogether. There's so much continuity, it's just ridiculous. He doesn't have any clue what some of these little innuendos mean, and it's driving him crazy. He wants to read DC really badly, but he feels like he's missing things that other readers would probably look at as obvious signs. He says that he did buy Crisis on Infinite Earths, Absolute, Infinite Crisis, Kingdom Come Absolute, and other collections. He can try to find and help understand this very confusing universe, but he's wondering if it's even worth it, and will it help to read some of these backstories? And he says, you know, even Marvel has the Ultimate line, which he loves, and is able to pick up basically any Marvel story and know what's going on in the characters and have a good time with it. And he kind of got into Marvel before Civil War and everything else, but he can be saved with some backstories. But is there any stories that we can suggest, or is it a lost cause of DC? So
I think that his position is the closest to mine, in a way, although he's much more concerned with the larger universe aspect than I am. But, like, I don't really know that much about all the DC continuity either. I mean, I just think it's a matter of finding the stuff that you like that's going on in DC and reading that, and you don't, you know, if you're not interested in the other stuff, don't. And
well, no, I mean, not to take the completely selfish take. I mean, I'm right there with you, Josh. I mean, like, I'm not nearly as versed in DC as Connor is. There's a lot of things I go look up and people who I don't know who they are, and I ask, you know, Connor or the comic book store folks or whatever, like, who's that?
What is that? Oh, yeah, but what I'm saying is I don't care.
Right, and I'm agreeing with you, saying that at some point you got to, like, there are references I know I'm missing.
Yeah.
That I, especially when it comes to Legion and stuff like that. Like, I've never read anything Legion.
Who knows about Legion anyway?
And I just literally, like, it just passes right through me. And it's like, it's just how much do you want to care about?
I think with a lot of DC books is that I will find something that I like for a little while, and then it will lose me. I tend to drop DC books a lot more because
you're casual.
Well, I am a little more casual with it, but then the other thing is, like, they will get involved in, I mean, Countdown's no...
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, Countdown to 52 are probably poor choices for the casual DC reader, if you ask me.
Although you guys love 52,
I actually think 52 was great for it, because it was it.
Yeah, but Countdown, not so much.
I'm really getting on the fence about that, because...
Yeah, yeah.
Although, I don't know why people... We get this a lot in emails. People pick up the Absolutes as an experiment to see if they're going to like it. That seems great.
The Absolutes are the exceptions, if you ask me.
Yeah.
They are not... You know,
but I mean, that's a lot of money to spend on an experiment.
Well, they're the best in show, too. Yeah. You know, I mean, the thing is, though, there's titles, you know, like Robin has been fantastic for a year plus. It is not tied up with any of that stuff. I mean, I think Checkmate's gone in and out, but I think that's been a great title. You know, we were just talking about Green Arrow year one.
But let's be honest about Checkmate. You like Checkmate because of Rucka and because of the type of stories they're telling.
Absolutely.
But Checkmate is deeply mired in the back channels of DC continuity.
Totally is.
But there are issues of Checkmate where I have no idea who the people are, no idea what they're talking about.
It's true, but it's written well enough that it's not actually dependent on those things.
Right, yeah, but the thing is, I could see where somebody would have a problem with that.
Sure.
Yeah, so. But anyway, yeah, so... You know, ultimately, it's your dollar and your decision. You know, it's one thing to want to be involved and jump on board and be reading everything, but at some point, you got to draw a line with what you're comfortable with.
You know, if you're not enjoying it, then, done.
Josh, you want to read the next one?
Yes, I will read the next one. From Tad S. We know who he is. In California, he shed most of his fanboy habits years ago, but even though he doesn't bag and board, he finds himself unable to take the top comic from the stack at a comic shop. I always pick one from several down, the one that hasn't been, quote, handled. This has backfired once or twice when I'm not paying attention and end up sliding out and purchasing the previous issue. Of course, you guys are still in the middle of it all. It's in your name. So what do you consider your most fanboyish trait? Has it ever gotten you in trouble in any way? Connor and I first have we have an issue with this particular habit.
Yeah, I hate that.
Oh, I do that.
I hate it.
Why?
Well, we used to go
because it symbolizes that you're picking it for the resellability quality of the spine and
No. I just don't want one that's all mangled.
Okay,
nice, crisp, clean copy.
Because
you pick up the top one. No,
Because
I understand wanting to have something that's in good condition. That makes sense. If I pick one up and it's got a crease in it or something like that, I'll buy a different one.
I do the same thing with magazines.
Right, but if the top one that you pick up, there's nothing visibly flawed with it, then you're being...
No, But the thing is that, like, I don't make the judgment when I pull it. I instinctively I reach my hand to where they are, and I with my fingers dial about three or four back and take that one.
Well, had you been in front of us at the comic shop that we went to, we would have muttered about you.
Yeah.
All right, and I would have stabbed you with my shiv.
Probably not. I would have elbowed you out of the way. I knew that with guys who were doing that.
keep in mind though that I shop at a much less traffic store than you guys do, and I'm not elbow to elbow with somebody, and also I'm do it very quickly.
Slows
like,
you down.
Even notice.
That was the thing.
I will punch you no matter what kind of store you're at.
This is getting violent. I'm not happy.
I was home all week, so I wasn't at work. Didn't go to my normal store. I went to a neighborhood store, and the guy put bags and boards in my bag. Without asking for them, and I don't know what the fuck to do with them.
Oh, son.
I don't. Yeah. I don't
know. I have, like, I have like
stack them. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this?
I have, like, 10 left, and I'm like, well, there's no point.
I just bought another thing, 100 bags.
I should just
boards.
Give you my extras because...
Blow me. I recently bought another copy of Suburban Glamour number 1 because mine got dirty. the one I bought last week. It got like, because it's a white cover, it got kind of like, you know, like that kind of like when something like another book is on top of it and the ink kind of runs off on the white. So I bought a new copy and quickly put it in a bag and board, put it in my long box.
Oh, God. Would you say that's indicative of your most fanboyish habit?
Well, that's my most recent, I would say. My most fanboyish habit is that but the thing is that it's, but I'm not ashamed of it, and you guys can go fuck yourselves, and like, I don't care. Like, I take my stack of comics and my bags and boards and go down and get in front of the TV with a long box, and I bag and board while I watch TV, and I enjoy it.
I don't think that that's bad. I mean, also because it's just ingrained in habit, but there's got to be something that you do that it doesn't make any rational sense. I mean,
buying the Suburban Glamour, that doesn't make any rational sense.
Right, but it's not a habit. That's a thing. I don't know. I am horrible about lending trades. I hate having trades go out unprotected or anything.
By what, armed security?
No, but like if like you have to lend them and people like want to carry them around in their backpack or something like that, that's right.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It kills me to do that.
And I know that they're books and meant to be read and everything, but shit, they're on my shelf.
Well, this came up in the 100th episode. I take the dust cover on hardcovers. I take the dust jacket off and keep that nice.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well.
I mean, that's the point, though. There you go.
Yeah. Connor, what's yours?
I don't have any, I don't think.
I don't believe that for a second.
The only strange thing I have, which is not related to comics, is my OCD to keep everything in the proper order. But other than that, I don't have any, like, fan. I don't care. My trades go out, they get bent, I buy a new one.
Let me ask you this.
Oh, wait a minute. I know what he did. Yeah. You go, Josh.
What order do you read your comic books in?
Oh no!
That's not fanboyish. Everybody has an order.
That's not fanboyish. No, that's unique.
Connor's
unique.
Specific method of reading comic books.
I do indies first, then non-continuity books, then Marvel books, then DC books, and then within those titles, I've got different orders for them.
I don't see anything. What's wrong with that?
That's not strange, though. That's mostly
that's just organization.
It's funny that the indie books have to come first because the continuity. I don't know. I think that's weird.
I like to read all the universes at the same time.
I don't like to. I like to spread it around.
I was gonna say Connor's recent penchant for buying things in trade that he has in issues.
Ooh.
What do you mean?
Like you bought the entire run of JLA that I know you have the issues for?
Right, so I can reread it because my issues are in Red Hook.
Right, but still, but you can go to Red Hook and get them.
No, I can't. That's been 3 hours.
You could.
He actually doesn't know where Red Hook is.
Okay. No, I mean, that's just me laying the groundwork to eventually getting rid of the issues. I mean,
so basically this question, let us fight.
Fuck you.
Wait, who?
Next question.
Bronson O'Quinn from Kentucky.
Great name.
I was recently reorganizing my shelves with my respectable collection of trades and found a minor but annoying problem. While most trades are the same size, here we go, this is more fanboy.
This is the same question.
This drives me crazy.
There are a few mostly hardcover and indie that don't quite fit in with the height of the others, and as a result, I have only two options. The first is to resize the pegs in the shelves so that even the largest absolutes will fit. But because of how my shelves are built, making each shelf large enough to accommodate one or two hardbacks causes the bottom shelf to be abnormally small, or having removed that shelf, abnormally large. While I'd want to keep certain books with their respective sections, I split them up by publisher, character, then title. Doing so would create a visual discontinuity that I find aesthetically displeasing, which, as you can imagine, irritates at least a couple of my peculiar manias and eccentricities. The second and final solution is to segregate my books by size, having only a couple of large shelf spaces for my hardcovers and putting everything else uniformly back in place under my aforementioned organizational system. This seems like the obvious solution, and you're probably questioning my sanity for writing when the answer seems so clear, but this destroys that sense of order that I've already established is oh so important. I want my DC with my DC, I want Marvel with my Marvel, but the invisible publishing demons seem only content with screwing with my harmonic and homogeneous shelving system. So now you're probably assuming my question is, what do you guys do with your own personal libraries? But that doesn't really help me, and it's much too obvious. My real question is, am I so anal retentive and obsessive compulsive about such minute details that I should either seek personal help or should just get over it? Should I worry about the importance of forced segregation, or does my obsession with how much size matters say something about Freudian about me? Any way you choose to answer, I'm sure the answer is...
Wait. I have an idea.
Let me
set my idea. I bet we can all guess what each other would say.
Okay, forgot.
Okay, first of all, you two guys absolutely relate with him.
I was going to say to him, there's nothing wrong with you. You're completely right. You need to get new shelves. Fucking keep the publishers together. By all means, do not separate the publishers. And I kind of question organizing by the character. That's just me. But my personal organization is by publisher and then by I do segregate by size. I keep the absolutes together, and then the larger hardcovers, the smaller hardcovers. But I try to instill an alphabetical because I grew up in the library. So
mine is purely alphabetical. It doesn't matter. I don't group by publisher or anything else. It's purely agency. I'm actually in the process. I'm moving bedrooms in my apartment. Somebody moved out. I'm moving into the larger bedroom. I wrote a few months ago about having no space. Now I finally got space. So I'm building custom bookshelves in order to fit my trade paperback. So I'm going to build them. I'm customizing shelves to fit absolutes and to fit the oversized hardcovers. And have smaller shelves for the manga-sized books and the digest runaways and things like that. So I'm actually going in. I'm designing and building myself these shelves.
And if you know anything about me, you know how I'm organized. And I don't even think they want to talk about it.
There is no organizational process. You don't make
any fucking place. We were trying to find books in Josh's house the other day, and it was like, let me close my eyes and just spin around, and then maybe I'll have a good chance of finding it.
I know where everything is.
Bullshit.
I do.
No. I wasn't saying it's bullshit that you know where everything is. I was saying it's bullshit just in general.
I put them up in the order that I buy them.
Yeah. I love how freaky we are and our audiences. Yeah. That's awesome. That's really cool. So if you're freaky and you want to share about your weird OCD eccentricities, you can send us an email at contact@ifanboy.com.
Or if you want to watch a lot of movies, you could join the Netflix. They've got over 75,000 titles. They've got HD movies and Blu-ray movies. If you got that, there's no late fees. It's free shipping both ways. It's fast delivery. Plans start from just $4.99 a month and up. And if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy, you can sign up for a free two-week trial. And if you go through that way, then we'll get credit for it, which is good for us. So thank you. Now voicemail.
All right, so our first voicemail continues the theme of OCD.
Hey guys, how's it going? This is Dave calling you from Montevideo, Uruguay. So I was just back in the States for my friend's wedding, and my friend picked up all my old titles for me while I've been away. I've been away for apparently about 4 months because I've got about 4 issues of everything. And my question is this. My friend apparently is a big X-Men fan because about 50% or about 30 of the issues that he got me are X-Men titles. So I'm kind of catching up on all the old X-Men titles from the summer. And I'm trying to figure out what Ron's talking about when he says that X-Men books always have either 5 or 7 members on a team. So, for example, I'm looking at X-Men 200 right now, and I'm counting 6 team members. So that would be, in this issue, Mystique, Lady Mastermind, Iceman, Rogue, Omega Sentinel, and Cannonball. I don't know. I was hoping maybe Ron could clear this up. Hope you guys are good. Ciao.
Well, Ron, you've been called out.
Okay, I can understand why he has a problem with this. This is something, a quick formula that I call the rule of 5 or 7, which is mainly a Marvel thing. I don't know if it played in DC, but I think it kind of did.
It's practical group dynamics.
Yeah, it was a formula that I think they started adopting maybe in the 70s, definitely in the 80s, a little bit in the early 90s. They've gotten away from it in the 21st century, in the 2000s, to be honest with you. But if you look at the teams, like for me, what I looked at like was X-Men, X-Factor, New Mutants, Excalibur, all the X-Men kind of books, even the Avengers, stuff like that, it always seemed that the teams were grouped in 5 or 7. Don't ask me why. The original X-Men were 5.
Well, it's easy why.
The all new all different X-Men, Wolverine and Storm ended up being 7. Why do you think it's easy, Connor?
Because then you can't have this team split down in the middle. You always have one group bigger than the other. If there's a division in the group, one side's going to have more people than the other.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like group dynamics, that sort of thing. Admittedly, the X-Men books recently, in the past couple of years, it's a mishmash of people, and they've gotten away from it, and I think that's one of the problems with the books. But I think 5 and 7 is your ideal team dynamic for a superhero team. And then within there, and we talked about this on the Jim McCann podcast with the Q&A with Marvel, within that 5 and 7, you get a telepath or a mind power, you know, a flyer, a bruiser. It's almost like, you know, forming a group in World of Warcraft. So so it's a formula for creating superhero teams, 5 or 7. Go back, look at comics over the past 30 years, you'll see that theme throughout.
Teen Titans would? At 5.
Sorry, what?
All right.
Okay. What is it? What is it?
Nobody is available.
I'm trying to do one, and I can't even remember what they used to say.
My lord.
More work. All right.
I nearly just spit my water. Let's go. All
right, our next voicemail. Our next caller is looking to add to his collection.
Okay.
Hey guys, this is Ryan from Houston. I was wondering if y'all could talk about some maybe like epic series, like kind of onto themselves, kind of along the lines of like Preacher, Strangers in Paradise. I think Why the Last Man might meet that criteria when it's done. But I'm looking to get into something else that's kind of good to get in trade. I think those are like these really kind of long-spanning, you know, in their own universe stories like that. If there's any other that I am missing or if you could recommend some, I'd appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Oh, man.
Okay, this is an easy one.
Rapid fire. Let's go.
Okay.
Transmetropolitan. Sci-fi story from Vertigo by Warren Ellis. Beginning, middle, and end.
Cerebus, Dave Sims' Opus, big phone books you can get. 300 issues of an aardvark in, I don't even know. He's got, it's like fantasy-esque swords, stuff like that. Yeah. Really, really good.
Sandman,
that's Vertigo. There was The Losers I just finished, like I was talking about earlier. There's 5 trades of that. It's a little shorter, but it's great.
It's hard to say without a genre.
Yeah. You know what? Vertigo's a great place for that if you like those, because they've got others along the same line. Lucifer is another one that's excellent.
Ooh, Bone, if you like the little more kind of not as gritty. Bone is a great epic, sprawling epic that you can get in trades or in one big volume, but it's awesome. So,
cool. Yeah.
All right. Our next voicemailer is calling about some books from Marvel.
Hey, guys. This is Sean from Seymour. And I got a few questions about some series that are coming up. I'd recently picked up Fool Killer number 1, the Marvel Max series. And I found that it's basically an upped-up body count of the Punisher. I was wondering if any of you guys read it and what you thought about it. And also, I have a question on Halo Uprising series that Bendis and Maliv are doing. It's been the first issue came out. I thought it was really good. But when's the next issue coming out? It's been pushed out, and it's been pushed back and pushed back, and I was just wondering if they're ever going to get it out on the market. Okay, great show. Bye.
All right, let's answer his questions backwards to forwards. How about that?
Okay.
Halo Uprising number 2 is solicited to come out on November 17th, 2007, and Halo Uprising number 1 had come out on August 22nd, 2007, so it's a little late.
It's tri-monthly.
Tri-monthly. It's a new format.
It's like 40 pages, though.
No, it's quad-monthly.
It's quad-monthly. It's quality. Don't get me wrong. You'll get your bang for the buck. The Maliv artwork is worth it.
Trade. Yeah. It is. It's not. It's going to come out. It's not like it matters, you know?
It's not continuity-driven, so
yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. I don't know where that came from.
I don't know either. Fool Killer. Did we read Fool Killer?
I did read Fool Killer.
Yeah? What did you think?
I didn't like it. It was just like a bunch of people getting killed, and like the sort of the violence and the swearing and everything was so obvious, and like, look at, I can swear in this book, that I was just put off by it. It was not organic. It was just, look at us be violent and horrible, and like raped on a pool table, horrible.
What?
I mean, no, yeah, Jesus. I mean, like really, like I was like, okay, I'm actually uncomfortable now.
Yeah.
And there was no sense of humor to it. Not that that's funny, but you know what I mean, like.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it was written by. I mean, Greg Hurwitz is a author. You know what I mean? Like he's
he's probably trying to make comic books gritty because he hasn't read any then.
Yeah, it is a Max book though, so that's what you'd expect from Max.
Yeah, I know, but it got to be a story, and it was just like, ooh, a bunch of people are getting killed by a vigilante. Ooh.
Yeah, but the thing is, I bet there's a lot of people who that's right up their alley.
Yeah, sure. Well,
really, yeah. So.
And they like crappy books.
Oh, that's not nice.
Oh, boo.
I only read the first part. It might get amazing, but I was really non-impressed.
All right, so if you have a theory about Fool Killer, you can call in at the voicemail to 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
I was just raw on that. Like, I haven't been in a long time. I kind of feel bad. Oh, well.
It's pretty bad.
Ron, you have an announcement to make.
Yeah, well, no, I don't make a big deal about it. But for those of you who like to keep track at home, the 7 of you who are amused by our lives, you've gotten pretty used to on Wednesdays waiting around for the pick of the week for the review to go up. Typically, it goes up around
midnight.
11 or midnight or 2 in the morning if Josh is doing it.
how about go to hell and suck it?
You're going to have to wait every 3 weeks. You're going to have to wait a little longer because I'm actually going to be relocating to the West Coast. So my weekly reviews will be going up on Pacific Standard Time. So those of you in California, Mike Romo, if you want to go to the website at 3 a.m. Eastern Time or midnight Pacific Time, you'll see my review because I will be out there in the sun avoiding fires. That's actually going to be as of November.
Wait a minute. When were you guys going to tell me about this?
Well, you're leaving the show, right, Ron?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's actually the move is precipitating my leaving the show.
Because yeah, I got
and
walk, people lined up.
Walking away from my fanboy proper. No, I'm just kidding. You can't get rid of me that easily. The show must go on. The show will continue. Both the audio show and the video show will not be impacted by this. Technology is a wonderful thing, as is airlines.
I have to make some calls then.
I can't believe I moved all the way out here to this fucking hellhole of fucking New York City, which is the crotch of America.
Hey, fuck you. Go then leave. Nobody would. They wouldn't want you here then.
Lord, fuck you. I learned that while I was here.
So those of you who've been with us for the long haul now will remember when we had Josh in L.A. for the first year. Now we will have Ron in another part of California, and it will be like coming home again.
Yes, it will. So
at least I don't have to see you as often.
Oh well. Oh. Yeah, go fuck.
And
yourself.
I won't have to talk. I won't have to talk to you until at least noon.
I know exactly. It'll be fun, you know. When things just get a little too kind of
good,
boring, and kind of repetitive, it's good to mix things up.
Productive,
you know?
You mean? So. All right, yeah. It wraps the show up for this week.
People say, "Did you remember the point when the show started? When the show fell apart? Oh, I remember when it started. Did we just jump the shark? I don't know if you guys felt that.
Exactly.
I can see teeth. So go to ifanboy.com and check out the Pick of the Week review and the discussion that goes along with that and all the other topics that we blog about throughout the week.
Every Saturday you can go to revision3.com/ifanboy or to ifanboy.com where our weekly video show comes up. Last week we did a Convince Me show, and this week we're doing a profile on a major independent company.
And it's way up there. You'd have to reach for it, maybe get a ladder.
Yes. So check it out. It's completely different than the audio show.
And if you dig the video show and you dig the audio show and you like the website, why not show your pride with a t-shirt? Go to jinx.com/ifanboy, pick up a t-shirt. If you buy a t-shirt, take a picture of yourself wearing it and send it in to jinx.com. They'll send you stickers and you can represent as part of the iFanboy faithful. So go buy your t-shirt today while you can still get them.
As we said earlier, you can email us at contact@ifanboy. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Call about any damn thing you want. It doesn't stop anybody else.
We are on the internet at myspace.com, comicspace.com, verb.com, Facebook, and at Twitter, both iFanboy and the three of us.
As well as ifanboy.com, where you can find links to all those sites and stuff like that. And if you dig the podcast, the best way to get the word out, let your friends know, tell your comic book store, tell all the people that read comics, go to iTunes, leave a review. We'd really appreciate it. Help us spread the iFanboy word.
Yes. And then finally, if you have more money than you know what to do with, and who doesn't really, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations and help us buy jewels.
Yes. Jewels.
Apparently. Now I'm hungry.
Josh just diamonded it out.
Yeah.
What is it?
I'm getting Hawkeye and diamonds in my teeth.
All right. Well, I got to go pack. So we'll see you next week.
Jerk.
This is like the most non-committal bombshell ever.
I know.
I'm Josh.
I'm Ron.
I'm Connor. I'm staying here, bitch.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.